Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport, on a night when Kyle Edmund has reached a Grand Slam semi-final. I feel like I need to say that twice, Simon Briggs, because, I mean, I think I said it about four times to Leon Smith, and every time I did it in commentary, he looked at me as though I was mad. You know, it just doesn't sound realistic. It's incredible what's happened, isn't it?
Well, I put in a request to the ATP for the last time anybody ranked number 49 or lower got to the semi-final. Do you know the answer to that? I'm still trying to figure that one out.
No, I really don't know.
And let's say he got past Cilic just for a minute. Then we'd be talking about Martin Vercoeck. What, 2003 French Open is the nearest point of comparison. It would just be sort of like you've been hit not twice by lightning, but about 17 times.
Yeah. It is that unlikely. Now, the story is, you will know this now by the time you're listening to us, that not only is Kyle Edmund through into the semi-finals of the Australian Open, he's not going to be facing Rafael Nadal, because, as you've just heard, Rafael Nadal is on his way into the interview room at 11:30 at night. And the reason he's on his way in a little prematurely is because he got injured during his match against Marin Cilic just now, and it was a pulsating match in parts. He went two sets to one up. It looked at that stage, really, Simon, as if Nadal probably was going to get the job done, didn't it? And you're not so sure?
No, I mean, I'm shaking my head at the bewildering nature of this evening's events, which I'm going to have to try and chronicle in the paper. And it's almost like you spend so much time looking for a line or a story that when you've got them sort of falling out of the sky like hailstones, you're a bit overwhelmed. It's just like everywhere you turn, something else is going bonkers. I mean, Rafael Nadal, okay, he's had long-term injuries, but you don't often see him pull up suddenly. It looked like he's pulled an adductor, would be my guess. There was some quite intimate massage going on, which the overhead cameras were getting quite a lurid view of Rafa's groin. And he just lost all power to his legs. And then by the end, he was limping in a manner that was reminiscent of Andy Murray towards the end of Wimbledon.
Actually, that's very true. That's exactly what it felt like to me when I was watching him walk towards our commentary box window, which is court height, you know, and you see them so up close. And he was limping like Andy Murray. And that's... anybody who's seen Andy Murray limping over the last 6 months, and we've seen a lot of it, Simon, because we've obviously followed it very closely, that's pretty disconcerting, isn't it? I mean, no suggestion that he's got an injury of anything like the severity, but still, not nice to see an athlete of that ilk, you know, just hobbling around.
Well, still, that's three of the big four in the last 3 weeks have gone down in quite spectacular style. As you say, you know, Rafa may not be anything like as long-term as the other two. But, you know, Roger Federer tomorrow, he better watch that no black cats cross his path, because there's something sort of weird and somewhat sorcerous about this sort of sequence of ill fortune for these big names.
There is. I mean, it's been a very, very strange day here at the Australian Open as Catherine Whittaker takes her seat after a long, long day on Eurosport, which started with wombats and koalas and what looked like an alligator to me in one of the photos that I saw in Catherine Whittaker's best day ever, as we've coined the Tuesday of the second week of the Australian Open, although she's a little bit tired now because it's been 12 hours of hard work.
14, actually, but I've got no right to complain because I did insist on getting the whole Eurosport crew in about 4 hours early this morning so that... I could be filmed having fun with Australian animals. In order to sort of legitimately justify it, I had to sort of pitch it as a feature idea of some. in order to get sort of photos and video for my personal collection, I had to pitch it as a sort of feature idea for Eurosport. And everyone was loving it back home until blooming Kyle Edmund went and sort of eclipsed...
stole your thunder.
My moment of glory with a 30-kilogram python that was placed around my neck.
Do go to the Tennis Podcast Instagram page if you'd like to see a full array, the full photo album of photos with Catherine and animals, which I've taken and posted unbeknownst to her. Before we speak to Catherine, Simon Briggs has got to go and do some work and go and speak to Rafa Nadal and Marin Cilic and all those sort of things. Just very quickly before we see you off, Simon, what is the paper going to look like over the next 2 days? I mean, how many pieces are you writing? How many words are going to be written about this?
Well, it's two spreads tomorrow, so that's four pages. So I've got... we're going to be hearing from Greg Wozzecki in a first-person column. We're going to have reports on both semi-finals. I think the women's tournament might get a bit of a reduction in size. I mean, I think we've been doing a pretty good job on that side, but perhaps tomorrow... equal opportunities might be suspended for a day.
Well, editorially, it's a pretty big deal, this, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, look, if it was Joe Konta in the semi-finals, the same would happen. That's not, I mean, yeah, that's not a gender issue, is it? I mean,
it's a mind-blowing
British
story.
British bias knows above all identity politics, I think. Rising
indeed
above all identity politics.
Rafael Nadal is saying in his press conference right now, tough moments, it's not the first time here that this has happened. An opportunity is gone for me. I'm a positive person and I can be positive, but today is an opportunity lost. It's really tough to accept. And if you go back, our colleague Stu Fraser pointed out that this is only the second time in 264 Grand Slam matches that Rafael Nadal has retired. The other one was here at the Australian Open against Andy Murray, who went on to beat Marin Cilic in the semi-finals and played Roger Federer in the final. How about that?
There's some omens in there, but I can't quite work out which way they're pointing. It feels like sort of crossed wires, doesn't it?
British bloke now ends up playing against Cilic and beats him and plays Federer in the final. There you go.
Quickly add that line to the paper, Simon.
Well, there's just too much to get in. I'm just kind of swamped, basically.
He's a broken man.
In fact, I've got to leave before you tell me anything else that I've got to get in the paper because there's no space in it anymore.
So Greg Wozzecki we're going to hear about. We're going to hear your full report. And then what do you do tomorrow?
They need to fly over some help for you, Simon.
Yeah.
Well, they do that sometimes. It has been known.
I mean, it's a long way to go.
A final appearance would be required, probably, I suppose.
There is a great tradition of Fleet Street hacks from all papers taking to the air as Andy Murray is apparently heading towards glory, landing to find that he's already gone home, never leaving the airport and going back on a 24-hour flight home again. That's been done several times, but the classics were the Tsonga first round at 2008 and the Verdasco third.
Yeah, fourth round here, yeah.
Yeah.
I think.
So those were two highlights. I mean, I wasn't actually covering tennis at the time, but I've heard many stories of frustrated.
The Tsonga one is legendary, isn't it? Because he was first or second match on, so he had lost before anyone had woken up in the UK and realised the Australian Open was even happening.
Yes. So Simon, you're off. Just finally, in the years you've covered this sport, where does this rank as a story? I mean, the fact that this was not expected. We were waited for years for Andy Murray to do this kind of thing, and it was always expected to happen. This is not expected to happen.
As a head bleep, it's kind of up there. Yeah, I mean, just because I've just been writing that the tennis seismograph just registered a few little tremors in Brisbane when he looked really good against Shapovalov, Chung and Dimitrov. But I guess it wasn't until Chung knocked out Djokovic that we saw just how good that was. And then, you know, let me give credit to Richard Evans, young Richard Evans with the ATP, who when I turned up here, he was like, Kyle's going to be Anderson. He's playing so solid.
Whoa. Who are you giving credit to there? We recorded a preview tennis podcast when both of you, one of you put his chances at 60-40, at the 40 side of the 60-40, and one of you put them at 30-70. And I can't remember which way around it was. And I was the only one championing Carl Edmund and picking him for that first round win.
I have to say.
So, I mean, Richard Evans, fine, but he is not on this podcast.
Let's be fair. When the three of us were sitting in a room on the eve of this tournament, when Catherine said, I think that's a 50-50 match, I went, no! Didn't I? Let's be honest.
And promptly changed your predictions.
I did. Well, I saw...
A little bit suspect, but anyway.
I'm picking you up here. I'm saying you got it right. Oh, dear. Hurts. Simon Briggs is off.
He's off.
He's had enough of this. So he's going to go off and write his pieces, leaving Catherine Whittaker and myself in an almost deserted media cafe now, which was absolutely humming with people about 2 hours ago.
And Henri Leconte.
Yes, that's right. And Henri is looking studiously at his phone with his feet up at the moment. Mats Wilander was in here watching, and there were various other players. I mean, it's one of those, isn't it, that when there's a big match on, everybody's kind of coordinating their dinner to be in front of a big TV screen, and that's what we saw with Nadal. I mean, where were you watching that? What were you seeing and feeling?
Well, I missed, I wasn't able to sit down and thoroughly watch the first set and a half because I was tied up with Kyle Edmund's post-match requirements. I mean, the 2 hours in the immediate aftermath of Kyle's win I'm still recovering from them, really. They were amazing, and I think I'll probably remember them for all of my career, and that sounds silly because most of my tennis career has been enjoyed in the limelight of Andy Murray, but there is something more special about this because it is such a surprise. I mean, we've taken Andy Murray far too much for granted for so long. You know, unless he reaches a final, we're sort of disappointed in him. Well, certainly that's been the case for the last, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. But there is a special joy about the unexpectedness of this and how little pressure there is about how it's all about both for him and for us. It's all bonus, isn't it? It's all you can only win from this point on. No one's expecting, even more so if it was Nadal, but no one's still expecting him to beat US Open champion Marin Cilic in a couple of days' time. So there is a really special joy in it, and it's kind of easier and more exciting to react to something unexpected, to get people's thoughts, you know, to speak to Tim Henman after the match, to speak to Pat Cash and Leon Smith, and you know, it's not just trotting out the same old things about how great Andy Murray is, which are all true, but it's, you know, really getting emotional reaction from people in the moment. And it's been, I'm sure, the same for you, David, but such a whirlwind, and so much so that I can't actually remember what question you asked me.
That's all right. What I do want to ask
it was the whirlwind that distracted me from the early stages of Nadal and Cilic, which is a shame because that's when it really was a contest. When he got that injury timeout on his hip, or certainly hip area. In the fourth set is when he
really pulled it, because in the third set, I mean, he won that tiebreak. I mean, if you didn't see this match, I mean, the celebration that Nadal gave at the end of the third set, when he just stood stock still in the middle of the court, stared at his team, pumped his fists, stared at them again, did it again. I mean, it was one of the most emotional celebrations I've ever seen from Nadal, and yet 3-4 games later, he'd pulled whatever muscle he's pulled in that hip flexor. That's what I'm guessing, at least, that it is. And he suddenly looked a forlorn figure, limping, grimacing, wincing, and just looking really down. Yeah. And it is, Simon and I were talking, that it's the same look on the face that we've seen last night from Novak Djokovic, multiple times from Andy Murray. It's not nice.
No, and the only positive I can take, and this is going to sound weird, so let me explain, is that he retired. Because when he took that injury time out, and it was clearly bad, it was instantly clearly bad, and then he went love 40 down, somehow still held serve, but the writing was absolutely on the wall. I said to my group of colleagues that I was sitting with, you know, Rafa doesn't retire, so what we're going to be subjected to here is a really sad, harrowing fifth set of him trudging on valiantly, in spite of the pain he's experiencing. And I didn't want to watch that. I really didn't want to watch that. And I didn't want to see that overshadow the moment for Cilic either, because he was great tonight.
He played incredibly well. That was a return. You spoke about your Goran interview yesterday, and we heard your amazing impersonation of Goran. And he was talking about the US Open, wasn't he? And that was a return to that sort of approach.
Yeah, it was. Similarities to Kyle Edmund about the way he strode onto the court. You know, that was... I remember... I was... I know it's going to sound smart in hindsight, and I'm not necessarily thinking that in the moment I was going, oh yeah, Carl's going to win this, but it really caught my eye the way he walked onto court today. They do those, this tournament, they do really great behind the scenes shots, you know, of the players warming up before a match and walking down that champions walkway. And there was something about the way Kyle swaggered onto court that really made me sit up and take notice. And there was something of that in Cilic tonight. You know, he wasn't nice guy Marin Cilic.
And I thought when he went two sets to one down that we may well get a bit of Marin Cilic feeling sorry for himself. And we really didn't. He just came, even regardless, forget the injury, he came out for the fight.
Well, exactly. And before the injury happened, I know he was two sets to one down, but it was still a contest. He was keeping it a contest. His head did not drop, and if the injury hadn't happened, he still had a decent chance of winning that match. So I really, as much as the Rafa injury is a huge part of what's happened tonight, it almost also isn't for Marin Cilic, you know. And you sort of saw that in his victory celebration, didn't you? It was a huge celebration, given it was by virtue of retirement. And I sort of liked that, because firstly, because obviously, you know, we give him the benefit of the doubt because we know he's a lovely, lovely man. And secondly, because he did play Bilerman well tonight and he did earn it.
He certainly could have won.
In many, many ways.
The way it was going, he could have won. What I am still surprised about is the drop in intensity of Nadal midway through the second set, when he was a set and a break up, 3-2 up, and he didn't win another game in that set. And I felt like he suddenly had a sugar low or something, because he just looked like he'd lost all of his spark.
We have seen it, though, this week. I know I've been more impressed this tournament by the attitude and hunger of Nadal than I have been by his actual level of play. And I thought his attitude and hunger might carry him to the title, really. I was so sort of bowled over, but I just thought he might, you know, scare everyone into submission, really. He looks so hungry for the title here. But, you know, there were dips against Diego Schwartzman. There were moments when he looked really nervous, and those nerves could come from a question marks over his body or his form. And, you know, we've heard the stat trotted out lots of times that he's never won a slam having not played a warm-up tournament on that surface. So this, you know, he's very frank about the fact that he needs matches. So even though he looked in the form he did and he looked as ravenous as he did, it was still a huge ask of Rafael Nadal to win this title. And he's done well to reach the quarterfinal stage. It is devastating to see him limp out in the way he did. But, you know, in the context of a few weeks ago, and we didn't even know if he'd be playing here, I know it's trite, but there are positives.
Yeah, I guess you look at it like that, if you can, from his perspective.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You and Mats Wilander had a chance to interview Kyle Edmunds straight afterwards, didn't you, in the Eurosport studio? Well, it's probably a couple of hours afterwards. Unusual setting for him. I mean, I think he'd been in the studio with you a few days ago, hadn't he? And, you know, he's got to get used to all this sort of thing. How was that? How was his chat with you and Mats?
Oh, it was lovely. Well, Mats is from the same town as Kyle's new coach, Freddie Rosengran. It's a very, well, the way Matt says it is sort of not a word that it's possible to pronounce in English. It's this little town in Sweden, and they've known one another since they were seven. And Matt has been following Carl's progress so closely this week because of that connection. I think he's a big fan of his tennis as well. And the joke for anyone that hasn't seen that interview, apparently it's the same town that Jonas Bjorkman is from and that Stefan Edberg is from. And apparently the joke is that people from that town can't hit a forehand. Because, I mean, Jonas Bjorkman, he would be the first to admit that his forehand was not his best shot. Same goes for Stefan Edberg, same goes for Mats Wilander. And I've not seen the Freddie Rosengran forehand, but apparently it's not setting the world on fire. So there's actually, apparently in Sweden, there is a term called the town I can't remember's name. It begins with M, forehand, which means the rubbish forehand. And there's this huge irony that he's ended up coaching, you know, the man with the biggest forehand in town right now. And
forehand.
So that really brought a bit of lightness out of Kyle, who is the most likeable chap. He can be quite serious and earnest, and that, you know, that can not necessarily always be the most media friendly thing, but you're always rooting for him. That his sort of agreeableness always comes across. So to have Mats there to bring a bit of lightness out of him, I mean, how can you not respond to the presence of Mats Wilander? You know,
yeah,
being interviewed by Mats Wilander and him recalling his first semi-final here in 1983, he beat John McEnroe, the then world number two, and then went on to beat Ivan Lendl, the world number one, in the final, and won his second Grand Slam. So, and you know, I sort of said at the end, Mats, you got any words of wisdom for Carl? And he really, you know, really paid attention, Carl. I mean, why wouldn't you? But I don't know, and Mats and I had a little chat afterwards, and Mats said, yeah, he totally believes that he can win another one. And, you know, there's no cockiness about him at all, but there is a swagger. Now, there is a swagger of a guy that...
I love the way Kyle Edmund, in all of his post-match interviews so far, has... It hasn't been, oh, this is just an amazing moment to have got here. It has all been about, well, I don't want to stop now. I mean, he's really matter-of-fact about that.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that comes from feeling like this has been a long time coming. He is so long been talked about as the hardest worker, or one of the hardest workers in this sport. And for him, it's just sort of the natural accumulation of all of that. Not that he felt entitled to reach this stage or anything. Not that he's not a bit surprised. But, you know, it's the old adage of hard work pays off. And yeah, he's been rewarded. So why would he not be rewarded again? You know, but it's logic, isn't it? And I'm not sure that it being Marin Cilic rather than Rafael Nadal favours him hugely, actually. I think you know, it's all about matchups, isn't it? It's all about matchups. Dimitrov was a better matchup for him than Kyrgios, and so it proved.
Cilic has won their one previous match, but it was a tie break in the second set. And he'd taken a set off Nadal. So, yeah, I take your point there. Cilic has got the big serve, etc., and he's clearly playing extremely well. But, you know, this is a funny old tournament, this one. Anything could happen from here. I tell you what is happening. Remember when I said that Caroline Wozniacki might win quite comfortably against Carlos Suarez Navarro? It's currently 5-5 Wozniacki at the moment. About time I got something right.
I mean, it could be, couldn't it? It is feasible that it could be a Chung Edmund final, which would be a repeat of the first round in Brisbane. Second round in Brisbane, wasn't it? He beat Shapovalov in the first round.
Well, tomorrow, though, we've got Thomas Burdick against Roger Federer. I mean, I've got a slight feeling that Thomas Burdick might be about to...
I mean, he hasn't been tested, Federer. And, look, I don't quite have the feeling you have, but I don't think it's... I'm not going to make fun of that feeling. I don't think it's the most preposterous thing. Here's a little thought experiment for you that the Eurosport team were doing earlier. Had Chung against Sandgren been a first-round match, what court would it have been scheduled on?
Crikey, I mean, you probably... They go up to court 22, and you certainly wouldn't have been surprised if that was on number 22,
absolutely.
Would you?
Absolutely, and tomorrow Eurosport have got John McEnroe commentating on it.
Wow.
As a Grand Slam quarterfinal, I mean...
A word today on Elise Mertens beating Alina Svitolina, whose struggles continue at the sharp end of slams. I mean, she did reveal afterwards that she'd got an injury of her own, and she wasn't trying to take credit away from her opponent, who has been brilliant. 6-4, 6-love. But at the same time, it is a trend with Svitolina, just as it is with Zverev.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she's got slightly further in slams than Zverev have, but it's the same kind of roadblock. It's the same, with a couple of bookies, she was favourite going into this tournament. In a tournament of no clear favourite, she was, with a couple of bookmakers, just edged the other, 25, 30 players that were being talked about as potential champions before the tournament on the women's side. So, yeah, I mean, like Zverev said after his match, I've got some thinking to do about what's going wrong at Grand Slam level. But I love Elise Mertens, I really do. She is silky smooth, I think a few people described her as earlier today. There's something really aesthetically pleasing about her shot making and the way she plays tennis. It's pretty unspectacular,
it all just works, though, doesn't it?
Fireworks and headlines, but it all just works, and it's very sort of coachable tennis. If you were a tennis coach, you'd probably say to your kids, try and copy Elise Mertens.
Yeah, very good point. Play starts tomorrow on the Rod Laver Arena with Angelique Kerber against Madison Keys. That feels like slightly too big a match to be playing that at 11 o'clock in the morning local time to me.
It does, and I know the argument. I know why they put the women's matches both during the day session on the Wednesday. It's because it's in the interest of fairness, because the women have to play their semi-finals on the Thursday, so to put one at night but I still don't think that's the right solution to that problem necessarily. I think it's going to feel a bit weird watching some Legends doubles tomorrow night when those two absolutely mouth-watering matches have been played. I mean, I'm biased because we're covering for European tournaments, which means that those two likely brilliant matches will take place overnight with only tennis diehard nerds watching. Tennis Sangren against Heyeon Chung splitting the two women's quarterfinals. Quarterfinals.
Tennis Sangren, just as a footnote, you did allude to it briefly yesterday in the show, and he has been the subject of quite a Twitter storm, hasn't he? Because of things that he's posted over the last couple of years. He appears to have deleted 2 years' worth of tweets.
Yeah, it's a max of a bloke that didn't have an agent and has just come into a run of success, has been tapped up by an agent. The agent's gone, tennis. If you want to get some sponsorship deals, I would potentially delete everything. But in the age of the screen grab, it doesn't really work.
And no, it doesn't.
Especially for a guy that was questioned about the views he'd expressed on Twitter.
By Simon Briggs.
By Simon Briggs in his last press conference. And he had... In his defence, not in defence of his views, but in defence of his sort of attitude towards those views, he'd said, you know, that he had defended his right to free speech and opinions and all of that, which I think, given it's once something's out there on social media, once the cat's out of the bag, it's not going back in. I think the only respectable thing to do once in that situation is to stick up for it and to stand by it. And
he did say, just to clarify as well, that whilst he follows certain people on Twitter, that he doesn't share their views, and he said that's not how information works, because I watch the news at night. It doesn't mean that I agree with all the stories.
But he had as a disclaimer on his bio, he said likes and retweets are not endorsements, which I... Is that not some sort of oxymoron? I mean, if you're liking something on Twitter, you are saying, I like this.
Not necessarily, because some people use them as a bookmark in order to remember what they were. They do
But bookmarking does exist. I mean...
Not on Twitter, it doesn't.
It doesn't. There are other ways to bookmark Donald Trump tweets.
No, seriously. I'm not sure I agree with you on that. But that having been said, individual
but
things.
But then
why
delete them then?
No,
that disclaimer and standing by it.
Oh, I agree with you. Look, individual things that he has tweeted, given the screen grabs that we've seen, are, well.
Yeah.
They're tough to look at,
yeah.
Put it that way. Simona Halep against Karolina Pliskova will follow that. Another cracking match. I mean, those are two awesome matches in the women's draw.
They're both Grand Slam finals, aren't they?
On paper, they are, really are. You know, you certainly wouldn't be disappointed with those as Grand Slam finals. Then it's Thomas Burdick against Roger Federer in the evening session. That is all to look forward to. Go and have a look at Catherine's shots of animals on the Instagram page. You will not be disappointed. They will brighten your day.
Yeah, before Kyle Edmund did his thing and before the Rafa Cilic drama happened, I thought this was going to be a 30 minutes of animal chat. I thought...
Yeah, we've had other stuff.
That is the headline of today. We're just going to be talking through all the animals I met and how great they were.
Very quickly, Angelique Kerber, Madison Keys, who's winning?
Oh, that's a horrible question.
Halep, Pliskova. I'm going Halep.
I'm going Halep as well. Sort of, that's heart, not head, really. I think Keys Kerber is a total 50-50. I know that's a cop-out. But
I'm going Kerber.
I think I am too, but goodness me.
I'm going Chung.
I'm going Chung as well.
And then I'm going Roger Federer.
But let's remember that on the Tennis Australia graphic, they do this win predictor graphic, which is... I admire their sort of experimentalism with these graphics and their attempts to try and sort of broaden our statistical horizons. But the win predictor statistic and graphic is the most nonsensical thing ever to happen to tennis, where they pop this image on a tennis court, which tells you what percentage chance a particular player has of winning, based on completely unfathomable hashtag data.
Catherine's not having
and
it.
And when Team and Sangren went into a fifth set, so they stick it up at the start of the match, and then if it goes into a fifth set or into a fourth set, it then readjusts the data based on other nonsensical data and tells you what chance they have of winning now that it's in a fifth set. Yeah. And as it went into the fifth set of Sangren Team yesterday, this graphic popped up and said Tennis Sangren had a 0% chance of winning. Somebody in the graphics room saw that graphic and still hit, yep, go for it.
I think it's time. So,
I mean, is it the same person that designed the app? I don't know. I'm just... Just
Catherine, scathing here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with the Telegraph and Eurosport.
Can I mitigate my criticism of Tennis Australia there with the fact that I love them, they brought me animals.
They did do that, and she's happy, generally speaking. We are also brought to you sponsored by La Manga Club, the magnificent holiday destination that has improved Catherine's forehand immeasurably, and which, in fact, I saw a picture of Kyle Edmund up on the wall because the British tennis squad, Davis Cup squad, have trained and they bring out all their juniors, and Kyle Edmund has trained at La Manga Club, so I can understand why. They really know what they're doing.
Marin
Cilic, she's coming to the interview room. I've got to go and interview him. We're also brought to you, supported by our executive producers, Triple S, Melanie Bowes and TennisBalls.com. Our special mascot this year is Charlie the Ferret, who is still Catherine's favourite ferret. Regardless of all these wombats and all this nonsense, she loves Charlie the Ferret. And we will be back tomorrow with another show after the next raft of quarterfinals here at the Australian Open, and we'll speak to you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favourite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.